next case, case 10-1705, in re all cases against Sager Corporation. Mr. Hoffman.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court, Patrick Hofer on behalf of Appellant Sager Corporation. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The issue before the court is whether Ohio courts may construct an artifice to avoid a sister state's law and continue the existence of a foreign dissolved corporation by permitting suits to be filed against it, or whether Ohio courts are obliged to follow settled Ohio law and the United States Constitution and apply the law of the state of incorporation to bar new suits against the foreign corporation.
Well, that seems like an easy choice. We'll just follow the law, right?
Your Honor.
Question I have for you is, what are the assets that this receiver took control of the Sager Corporation? I thought it was dissolved in 1998.
That's correct, Your Honor. There are no assets of Sager. The courts below treated insurance policies as assets over which a receiver could take control or possession for the benefit of tort claimants. But insurance policies are not property that a tort claimant can attach. In fact, there's an Ohio statute, there are two Ohio statutes, which specifically bar tort claimants from suing an insurance company to acquire insurance proceeds prior to a tort judgment. So Ohio statutorily bars a tort claimant from attempting to obtain anything from an insurance company prior to having a judgment. And the United States Supreme Court said that's not just fair, that's due process. You cannot establish jurisdiction for a tort suit by ignoring the lack of susceptibility of the tort defendant to the jurisdiction of the court and say, well, there's insurance, therefore we're going to focus on the insurance. The tort defendant, the court has to have jurisdiction over the tort defendant, and on that issue, whether or not the defendant has insurance is irrelevant, and it violates due process to pretend that the issue is about insurance.
Your argument is double, it's twofold. No jurisdiction over the corporation, and two, no asset to receive.
Exactly, Your Honor. The courts below recognized that there was no personal jurisdiction, no existence of the defendant. And so it looked to have a receiver accomplish what the law couldn't accomplish directly. And that is, of course, contrary to settled Ohio law going back decades. A receiver cannot accomplish indirectly what the law forbids directly. The receiver is merely an arm of the court. Receiver can't do anything the court can't do. So if the court can't establish jurisdiction over the tort defendant, the receiver can't, the artifice of receiver can't accomplish that either. So Justice O'Donnell, your question isn't this simple. And we posit to the court that in order to agree with our position and reverse the courts below, this court has only to recognize that every issue, every legal premise used by the courts below has already been rejected by Ohio law, and in fact rejected by states all over the country, and rejected by the United States Supreme Court. There is no law supporting what the courts did below. What the appellees want the court to do is ignore the law. They don't address our arguments in any substantial detail. They focus on the result.
Counsel, there does appear to be some divided authority in the country about whether or not you apply for terms of winding up and a limitation on winding up of a dissolved corporation, whether you apply the law of the state in which the claim is made or the state in which the corporation was incorporated. And of course, we know a lot of corporations in this state or in the country are incorporated in Delaware, but they operate in all kinds of states. So you're saying the law is clear, but there does appear to be some sort of a division about how you do that. Are you indicating that the majority rule is that you apply the limitation in the state of incorporation, but there is a minority of courts that do something else?
Your Honor, the only courts which have found jurisdiction to wind up a foreign corporation in a state have either involved a state statute which permits that, which does not exist here, a corporation which not only engaged in interstate commerce, but actually went into the state and did business in the state in the constitutional sense. That is, it had an actual continuous presence in the state, which subjected it to that state's law. And it had physical assets located in the state over which the state had sovereign control and therefore jurisdiction on an NREM basis, and therefore a receiver could be appointed to deal with those assets. None of those conditions apply here. Sager, there is no Ohio statute applicable to foreign corporations which would continue their existence beyond what the state of incorporation provides. There is no physical asset, and of course Sager did not do business in a constitutional sense in Ohio. It manufactured goods in other states which were used here. And that raises another critical issue for the court to consider, which is in the context of a foreign corporation which is only alleged to have been engaged in interstate commerce, what power does a state, from a legislative perspective as well as a jurisprudential perspective, have over the foreign corporation? And in Allenberg, the United States Supreme Court, 1974, said, as a matter of the Commerce Clause, a corporation engaged in interstate commerce, even though subject to personal jurisdiction, because it may have engaged in certain contacts over which the local court may use to establish personal jurisdiction, still, the state may not apply its corporation law to control the corporate aspects of the foreign corporation, may not require appointment of a agent for service of process. There is unanimity on that point. There's no question on that point. There is no division, and on that basis alone, the court should reverse the courts below.
Counsel, you do, in your answer to Justice Kupp, initially I thought you were saying there were no contacts of Sager Corporation in Ohio, but I think the latter part of your answer conceded if Sager Corporation were alive and well, it could be sued in Ohio because it did business with, sold product into Ohio, did business with Ohio companies. So the long arm statute would allow one to reach Sager Corporation by bringing an action in a court in Ohio if the corporation were alive and well. In fact, these people would be able to sue in Ohio courts.
The Ohio long-arm statute extends to non-resident corporations which have committed acts outside of Ohio which have caused injury to persons in Ohio. And, of course, even beyond the long-arm statute, that's subject to constitutional limitations of minimum contacts. There is evidence.
So if Sager were still in business today, these folks claiming injury could bring their action in Ohio.
There is evidence suggesting that, Your Honor, but personal jurisdiction from a minimum contacts perspective is not the same.
I understand.
As corporate law jurisdiction. And even a company that did much more than Sager, that is, had an actual plant or representatives, employees present in Ohio, registered with the Secretary of State, has certificate of authority, doing business in Ohio, still would not, Ohio would not have jurisdiction to appoint a receiver for it. There is no authority under Ohio law under which an Ohio court can claim to wind up a foreign corporation. In fact, all the laws to the contrary.
So in this case, we have a foreign corporation that was dissolved in 98, where the Illinois statute limits suit against a dissolved corporation for 5 years, which would take us to 2003. Is there any case on point, as you've done your research, that would find analogous facts that would allow a suit to proceed? I think they didn't file here till 2009?
2007.
Well after the five-year statute of limitations.
No analogous statute, Your Honor. In fact, the near unanimous American jurisprudence on the issue is that the law of state incorporation determines the capacity, the existence of the corporation. And in fact, if Ohio were to decline to apply the Illinois law, the 5-year survival period, mm-hmm. What is its option? Well, in a case called Citizens Energy, the Seventh Circuit, Judge Easterbrook, examined that issue as applied to the Illinois statute and said, we have two options. And in that case, it's the federal court is standing in the same position as the trial court below because it was a federal cause of action. It's asking the question for liability under federal law, what law are we obliged to apply? And Judge Easterbrook said, we have two options. We can apply the law of state of incorporation, which gives 5 years for suits to be asserted, or we revert to the common law rule. And the common law rule is, upon dissolution, there is no more corporation that can be sued. Pending suits are abated. Nothing else can happen. And in that case, the court said, well, we'll take 5 years. That is the choice that this court has and that the courts below had. There is no statute. There is no principle. There is no jurisdiction under which Ohio can claim to extend the life of a foreign corporation. In fact, Ohio statutes contain nothing that would extend the life of a foreign corporation.
Counsel, although 273501 was the statute that the Court of Appeals used, Section E, talking about when a corporation has been dissolved or is insolvent or in danger of insolvency or has forfeited its rights, a receiver may be appointed. My question is, what is the statute in Ohio for domestic corporations in appointing receivers?
Chapter 1701, applicable to domestic corporations, revised code 1701.89, establishes the procedure by which a court of common pleas can appoint a receiver and establishes the jurisdiction to do so.
What is the statute? How long? What is the statute of limitations for appointing a receiver in that case?
Ohio corporation law, as applied to Ohio corporations, permits Ohio corporation to continue its existence for the purpose of winding up its affairs following dissolution. There's no specific time period set for accomplishing that. However, we, looking at the cases acknowledge the time period is not infinite. And obviously, the law cannot create something in perpetuity that cannot defend itself, cannot really stand before the court. So that question is unanswered in Ohio law. The court has not ruled on that.
Mr. Holford, the Sager Corporation has been wound up, though, in Illinois. Am I correct about
that? That's correct, Your Honor.
Do we know when that was accomplished?
No later than 2003, Your Honor. It ceased doing business in 1989. So, in fact, there are many years after it stopped operating that it continued to be subject to suit, and then 5 years beyond that.
Thank you.
I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Bevin?
Chief Justice O'Connor and members of the court, my name is Tom Bevin, representing the appellee in this case.
And the question for you is, you have basically claimed that the assets you're after are the insurance proceeds. But under Ohio law, you can't get to insurance proceeds until you sue the main tortfeasor, you get a judgment. This company is out of existence. There's no statutory existence. How do you sue the company? How does it defend itself? How do you reach the insurance, even if we were to find that you had the right to appoint a receiver?
That is the purpose of the receiver, to wind down Sager's affairs in Ohio.
No. That's not answering my question. Winding down doesn't mean anything. How do you get a receiver? Does the receiver say, I automatically default and you now can go to the insurance policies? What does the receiver do that when it has no corporation in existence anymore?
Okay, the receiver accepts service of process of the claims and then tenders those claims to Sager's insurance carrier. And then the
with
insurance
no judgment?
With no judgment, no, it just like.
So how does the insurance company determine whether they're valid claims or not without any judgment under Ohio law?
Then the insurance company will defend Sager and litigate the claims as if Sager is there.
But Sager doesn't exist, so there's nobody to testify, there's nobody to call upon, there's nobody to do anything. How does that happen?
In most asbestos cases, Your Honor, we're dealing with things that occurred 40 and 50 years ago. Usually there isn't anybody to testify. This is what we deal with in asbestos cases. In fact, as counsel indicated, Sager ceased doing business in the late 80s, didn't dissolve until 2003, and so this went on for many years without anybody there for Sager to testify.
So you're saying the receiver can bypass the Ohio law that requires a judgment and make a direct claim to an insurance company?
No, these are not direct claims against insurance company. Absolutely not. That's the purpose of the
receiver.
But
there's no corporation to sue, so how do you get a claim?
The receiver then stands in the shoes of the corporation, like any receiver.
And you're saying then that the corporation has a duty to defend pursuant to whatever the contract they may have with their now defunct client?
The insurance carrier, yes. Yes.
Mr. Bevin, your position is that the receiver will then act on behalf of Sager. Is that it?
That is our position, Your Honor.
Well, in Ohio, for example, if we don't have a corporation that we can serve process on, the corporation sometimes has a statutory agent, or sometimes the Secretary of State may accept service. What is the provision you have that says a receiver can do that? Or a foreign corporation?
Yes, Your Honor.
This is a novel concept to me, but I'm all ears to find out what your thoughts are.
Well, and I'm not so certain that it is a novel concept, because in the asbestos field, we've used receivers for many years now.
For service on foreign defunct corporations?
We've used them for service on Ohio State dissolved or defunct corporations. And it's the same process. The receiver stands in the shoes of the corporation, accepts the service, and tenders the claims to the insurance carrier, which then defends the claims and, if appropriate, pays on the claims. And so the process...
And so you bypass statutory agent, you bypass all the corporation law, and you bypass service, and the receiver just stands in for the court-appointed receiver becomes the corporation.
Yes, Your Honor, and we're not bypassing service. We are affecting
You're making service on the receiver.
On the receiver, yes, Your Honor, and we're not bypassing the corporate law. The receiver can't do anything that the corporation can't. And in this in these cases, the court puts these are very limited receiverships. The court isn't allowing the receiver to take control of a company, interfere with the internal management of a company. No, all the court is permitting the receiver to do is to accept service, and then the receiver tenders those claims to the insurance carrier. And it's a very common thing that's going on in asbestos cases in Ohio, because we're dealing with this long latency period.
Is this your first case where you successfully had a receiver point for a foreign corporation that's defunct?
We had a receiver appointed, I believe, for a company called North American Asbestos, which was an Illinois corporation, which did not object to the appointment of the receivership.
And were they in existence?
Just like Sager, they were not in existence.
Okay, so who was there to object?
There wasn't anybody
and
there.
And what happened to that after you got the receiver? What happened to that case?
Those cases are in the process of being litigated.
And did you tender some claims to an insurance company in that North American case?
In those cases, we're trying to determine who the insurance carriers are, if there is insurance policies that would be in effect on those
and
claims.
I presume that was an appeal, because there is no corporation left to appeal it. I mean, this is unusual that we have an appeal for a non-existent corporation, but in your case, you got away with something because you had nobody to contest it, correct?
Yeah, in this case, the insurance company has stepped in and is contesting what the trial court did in this case. And I did want to point out that it's unusual this to be involve a tort case. It involves a tort case in this situation because of the long latency period between onset of exposure and onset of disease. This is much more likely to occur in a contract case or perhaps in a public project case. Those of you in Northeast Ohio, we have a large Interbelt, $300 million Interbelt project going on, where the contractor is an Illinois corporation doing the job. And of course, as was discussed in the preceding case, there's bonding and insurance requirements for those projects. And under the appellant's argument, then the taxpayers of Ohio, whether they be Champaign County or the state of Ohio, they're at the mercy of what this foreign law says. If the foreign law says, hey, our corporation can't be sued anymore, than the taxpayers of Ohio.
What does full faith and credit mean then, if you say we're at the mercy of foreign law? Does that mean there's no full faith and credit that we give to foreign law anymore?
No, it doesn't. But in this case, I guess the question then becomes, which we raise at the lower courts is they talk about comity and full faith of credit, but what about our laws? Why do our laws have to take the back seat?
Well, couldn't that be contracted? I mean, you're talking about a parade of horribles that could be dealt with through a negotiated contract between the Illinois and the Ohio, the state, the county, the city, who's ever involved, that would be able to deal with that sometime in the future if that ever occurred.
And
we're not here to settle that. You just brought it up. I'm just, commenting on it. And I don't know that it's really relevant here.
Mr. Bevin, the problem I have is that there are no assets of the Sager Corporation, and the only asset that I understand that is in the foreseeable future is an expectancy that if a claim were presented and if a judgment were entered, then there might be insurance proceeds to attach or to collect from. But we don't proceed and consider that insurance proceeds are assets of a corporation.
I believe that an insurance policy that a corporation bought and paid for is an asset of that corporation. Yes, Your Honor. Now,
what would have happened to it in the dissolution and the winding up of the Sager Corporation in 1998, or when it went out of business in 1989? What would have happened to that asset?
Presumably, the policy is still out there, and
not wound up.
The cases that appellant cited, and I don't disagree with those cases, which is the insurance policy is not a property of the tort claimant. The cases are clear on that, and that's not what we've argued in this case. That's not what the trial court or the court of appeals decided. They never indicated that those insurance policies were my client's property. No, those insurance policies are an asset of this dissolved corporation that needs to be wound down here in Ohio, because there are still claims here in Ohio.
Counsel, one of the relevant issues is whether or not Section 273501 authorizing an appointment of a receiver for a corporation that has been dissolved applies only to domestic corporations, or whether it applies as well to foreign corporations. And apparently there's a separate section on foreign corporations, and it doesn't have this authority. Would you comment on that?
Yes, and I would urge the court to look at the timing of those statutes. The first statute was 273501, which is what we are relying upon here, which was adopted in 1953 by the General Assembly. Then in 1955, the General Assembly adopted 1701.90. Repeatedly in appellant's brief, appellant refers to 1701.90. That's not the statute we're relying upon here, because in 1961, the General Assembly then adopted 1701.98, which says that 1701.90 only is applicable to domestic corporations. In 1961, the General Assembly could have, but chose not to, also apply 2735.01 to only to domestic corporations. So it had that opportunity, and the General Assembly chose not to. So clearly, 2735.01 also applies to domestic corporations. In much of the cases that appellant cites here refers to it being improper for a state to exercise visitorial powers over a foreign corporation, meaning powers that interfere with the management or the operation of a corporation. Those are the instances when courts around the country have said, no, that goes too far. Even courts in Ohio have said, that goes too far. That's not what's occurring here. We have not asked for, and the trial court did not give visitorial powers to the receiver in this particular case.
It occurs to me that there are important implications to your case that go well beyond the asbestos cases. At least in the case of asbestos, the manufacturers at the time thought they were providing a good product that provided a good and needed application in a variety of places, at least for a period of time. I know there's arguments that at some point they knew it wasn't. But I'm thinking of businesses all over Ohio located here who chose to incorporate in Delaware, as Justice Cupp has pointed out, or Justice O'Donnell, or incorporate in some other state, or perhaps it's an international corporation that's incorporated where the home office is. but they have plants in Ohio. And at those plants, they were either reckless or worse with stuff that they set in barrels out back and eventually caused environmental issues that remain here. Now the corporation's gone. But there may or may not be insurance that covered those misdeeds. What we decide here is going to have an application to all of that as well, is it not?
Thank you. And that's what I was pointing out. This isn't a real big issue in the asbestos litigation side. And on the tort side, it's not a big issue. It's unusual to hit to involve a tort situation because of the long latency period. But it's much more likely on a large government project or on an environmental cleanup project where some foreign state says our corporation can't be sued anymore. And we've submitted the second restatement of conflicts of law and says in those situations, and I think the law is pretty, the restatement is very clear that Ohio law should apply. We don't have any type of a statute of limitations on a dissolved corporation.
But you Mr. know, Bevin, even if we were to look at 273501 and say this also includes foreign corporations, shouldn't we respect the law of the state, the foreign state? And even if we were to say, all right, it covers foreign corporations, but we look at the choice of law, and here Illinois says you've got 5 years to do it. I mean, it seems to me to harmonize both ideas if we were to do it that way.
Well, and yes, Your Honor, Illinois law and Ohio law really is the same. Both laws allow for the appointment of a receiver. Both laws allow for a suit against a dissolved corporation. Okay, the only difference between Illinois law and Ohio law is Illinois has a 5-year statute of limitations. And so the question is, do we apply Illinois statute of limitations or do we apply Ohio statute of limitations? And that's where I urge the court to look at the second statement of conflicts of law, which this court has adopted in the Ohayon case. And in that situation, the court says we apply, particularly in this case, a tort case, we apply the law where the conduct that caused the tort, caused the injury, occurred. Ohio law applies. Another good example, analogy, Your Honor, is if—
But that's governing what the tort law is. That's not governing what corporate law is.
Pertaining to statute of limitations. We're talking about a statute of limitations situation here, Your Honor. And a good
For suing for a tort, so you would have whatever the statute of limitations is for suing for asbestos.
Yes.
That's not talking about what rights you have under corporate law, suing for corporate liability, for winding up. That's a very different argument than your tort conflict of law is, yes, if you have an asbestos claim, your statute of limitations for your asbestos claim in Ohio would apply.
And I understand that, and I think an analogy that we've looked at is that we have a statute of repose for, say, a company that manufactures a machine that injures a person here in Ohio. Many states do not have a statute of repose for that. So if the state is incorporated in a state that says, you know, there is no statute of repose, do we use that foreign state's statute, which is no statute of repose, or do we use the Ohio statute of repose in this situation? Certainly, it's unusual for me, certainly on the asbestos side, to be arguing that Ohio law should apply because most states have don't have the onerous laws that we've had here in Ohio recently with respect to the asbestos cases. But I would urge the court to look at the Stetson case. We're talking about an 1853 Ohio Supreme Court case. And I had to actually read that case several times. It's written before the Civil War, so it's kind of hard to understand. But that case is very much on point. That indicates that to apply Ohio law applies when determining whether or not a corporation can sue or be sued. In that particular case in Stetson, it was a dissolved foreign corporation that desired to sue in Ohio, and the court said, look at Ohio law to determine if that foreign corporation can sue. I didn't look at the foreign state's law, it looked at Ohio law in that case. And that was, I think, the oldest and the very first case on this, and many of the cases that have been cited in this case refer to Stetson.
Thank you, Mr. Bevin.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Hofer, you've reserved a little over 2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. Just to respond to a couple of the points made, Mr. Bevin indicates that he has used receivers in other cases. To our knowledge, those were not objected to by the parties. In fact, there may have not been a party present, so there's been no court approval.
Counsel, is there a way to force the receiver to turn the claim over to an insurance company? If it's a court-appointed receiver, I don't know what the duties of a receiver would be under these circumstances.
Your Honor, it's a mystery. A receiver would be an arm of the court. It's supposed to be impartial, not partial to either side, supposed to receive assets, wind up. There's nothing to receive. There's nothing to wind up.
I'm wondering how the receiver, who would direct the receiver to receive, well, of course, they could receive the lawsuit, but...
The receiver would be acting at the direction of the court.
Okay.
Couple more points. Mr. Bevin conceded that he does not take the position that insurance policy is any property of a tort claimant. And if that's the case, there is therefore no basis that a tort claimant, any tort claimant, can seek a receiver. One of the fundamental premises of receivership law is that the party seeking receiver have a property right to the property sought to be received. And that's proved by clear and convincing evidence. If there is no property right that the claimant has, there is no basis for a receiver to be appointed. Justice Cupp, I think you asked about Revised Code 2735.01. The current statute was adopted in 1953. The original statute was adopted in 1852. And the wording practically the same. It's in our appendix. All of the cases we rely on saying that Ohio does not have jurisdiction to appoint a receiver for a foreign corporation were decided after that statute was passed. Therefore, 2735.01 can't be interpreted to apply to foreign corporations. Courts consistently have held Ohio doesn't have jurisdiction. Finally, Your Honor, Mr. Bevin referred to Stetson, decided in 1853. What happened there was the foreign corporation had already been sued, and the question was whether Louisiana law abated the suit, and the court held, if the suit's already filed here, we're going to let it continue. But this court at the same time said the existence of the corporation, whether it's subject to suit, is subject to its local state's law. So if the suit hadn't been filed, in that case, Stetson would hold, it would have been barred. We ask that the court reverse the orders and judgments of the courts below. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This matter is concluded. We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Marshall, would you call a recess?
Recess.